They should all be here. Daisy is home. She was showing up last night, but she had to go to school because they need geometry. EOC, so. About the two of them, like, oh,
she's been the same way. We kept her home last Thursday for nausea, and yet she stayed nauseous. But she never threw up. Never had a fever, but she has stayed nauseous. That just went away like a day ago, didn't it?
I had a ginger ale through the test.
I was like running to grab ginger ales to keep her going.
Wow.
She just didn't eat and drank ginger ales.
She's been super nauseous.
It's been bad. What is going on?
I don't know.
Sending y'all off maybe for the summer.
Would you pray us in? We just thank you for this time to get over, Lord, that we ask that you direct the conversations, Lord, that you bring revelation to us, Lord, that we can use and apply in our lives. In Jesus' name, amen.
Amen.
So we're in chapter 4, and I kind of look at this chapter as the path of just and the way of the wicked. I think it's a good title for it. Is there anyone that's interested in reading the first 5 verses?
Jarvis, please.
Okay, which verses?
Verses 1 through 5.
Hear ye children the instruction of a father, and attend to no understanding. For I give you good doctrine, forsake ye not my law. For I was my father's son, tender and only beloved in the sight of my mother. He taught me also and said unto me, let thine heart retain my words, keep my commandments, and live. Get wisdom, get understanding, forget it not, neither decline from the words of my mouth.
Huh.
It's good advice. Solid advice.
Thoughts?
We have this conversation frequently in my house. Like, frequently. In fact, we've had this conversation today. About, less than an hour ago.
In fact, one of my sons, who's in fact here.
Oh my gosh.
Oh, it's hi. Hi, Luke. Sorry. I was talking about you, but I'll let you.
Well, you know, just... Not, we're not throwing you under the bus. But just talking about how we, some lessons we had to learn the hard way, and we want to.
And still do.
And still do. And it's funny because you have 3 generations. My parents know that I had to learn some lessons the hard way. And, you know, you want to prevent your children from having to learn things the hard way, and you hope that they're going to grab hold of the instruction. Don't abandon my teaching, it says in verse 2. Son with my father, tender and precious to my mother. I say this a lot too. hold on to my words and keep my commandments and live. We want our children to have quality of life. We want them to encounter as little, we know that life is hard enough, and so we want them to have as little heartache as possible. We know that God's going to do a work, and they can either take the easy road or the hard road. And so, what do you think, Kathy?
I was putting my hand going, yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
He looked at me like, lift up.
Same, yeah.
We want our kids to learn things the easier way, like I had to learn the hard way. A lot of times, I didn't listen to sound guidance from parents. That was a challenge for me, unfortunately, to do the opposite. So, yeah.
And you say you had to learn the hard way.
Yeah, my mom was this person. You better listen.
I think we choose to learn the hard way.
Yeah, I chose to do that.
The advice is out there. The good counsel's out there. Mm-hmm. There's people we can talk to. We're just stubborn and choose to learn the hard way.
Better.
Mm-hmm. There's a, and I, it's a challenge for me, but if I suggest that everybody take a look at Joash, the king of Judah, and his mentor Jehoiada, and see that Jehoiada mentored Joash, and Joash kind of deviated from his mentor because he knew more. Mm-hmm. And I think it's intriguing. You know, my dad told me things, and it says, I'm going to break the mold. Well, the mold broke me. My dad was right.
Well, I think it's interesting you should say that because in verse 3, so it's starting out like Solomon is talking to his sons, and he's entreating them already, saying, be attentive, be, he's asking them, he's, to listen to him and what he's learned. But he's also acknowledging in verse 3, when I was a son with my father. Mm-hmm. So he's saying, what I'm about to tell you is time tested. This is what my father said. So King David said to me, and now I'm passing it on to you. Mm-hmm. And so he's trying to say, please be attentive. I'm not only telling you something that I've learned, I'm telling you something that's time-tested that I learned from my father that was told to me. And so I think that's important. He's giving discipline in this process of, listen, I'm going ahead and giving you the guideline. I'm giving you the little barriers here. Please listen. This is why you should listen to me. You don't have to figure this out.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
And then this is a question. The second part, it says, tender, the only one in the sight of my mother. Wasn't he kind of a favorite of Bathsheba's? Wasn't Solomon kind of a favorite?
Losing his older brother, older brother in infancy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, after the one she lost, of course, that died, mm-hmm. but she was kind of, she kind of had a partiality to him, and so, you know, that kind of stuck out to me.
The name Solomon means beloved of my father.
Mm-hmm.
So it's Jedediah, I believe it is, if I'm not mistaken.
Mm-hmm. So here's another half of it, right?
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, first half is listen to what I'm saying. But here's the other half that has affected me, at least. Mm-hmm. Satan hates the family. He hates the Christian family. He hates godliness represented in families and in the world. Mm-hmm. The world is never going to stop trying to influence your kids. Mm-hmm. So if you're not influencing them, and if you're not being willing to have hard conversations or uncomfortable conversations with them, they're going to get it from somewhere else. Mm-hmm. And so I've had to...
What's up, man?
Hey. I've had to not necessarily give myself a pep talk, but remind myself more than I ever thought I would have to that, like, they can either learn it from me in the way that I want them to know it, or they're going to learn it from their friends at school. So, you know, that's the other half is that don't let Satan drive wedges between you and your kids by making something taboo. Mm-hmm. Talk to your kids about the hard things. Talk to your kids about the hormonal things. Talk to your kids about the struggles. Like, I was once my father's son, too. Caleb, you realize that, like, I still like girls. I'm married to your mom, but I still like girls. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm not impervious to being tempted. So,
well,
that's the other half of it.
I think this whole chapter kind of caters to that and how, like, you're watching, like, a father, how he was giving wisdom to a son and how the son is now giving wisdom to his sons,
mm-hmm.
and kind of the time that was taken, because that, and that's just, I mean, really, you just gave the description as like a universal for chapter 4. I mean, we'll still go through, but Well, that is the whole description,
really. As Christian parents, we got to do the same thing for each other.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like, there are certain things that we need to keep out of the world as far as the world's knowledge of maybe where we fall short. But there's also, like, those same things are areas where, like, we need to build each other up and be accountable and vulnerable to each other and not, like, burn somebody because they irritate you, for example. If that makes any sense. I don't know. Like the thing that I wish we did better here was I wish that we mentored the men better here on, like, owning a business and, like, running a business or being wealthy, you know, whatever. The Mormons are really good at it. They're really good at, like, mentoring their community, not just on spiritual things, but on life things. Mm-hmm. And we're not. I mean, I don't think we really are. So, like, that's another thing that Satan does with, like, the actual Christian church is, like, you've got your, maybe in, like, a bigger church, for example, and I don't know this from direct experience, but I'm just going to make an assumption here at the risk of being wrong, but, like, there's probably some pretty wealthy people that go to some bigger churches that wouldn't want to tell other people in that church how they got successful because it would create competition for them. That's just an assumption. But if we're not going to do that with each other and with other believers, then who's going to do it?
I think the highlight in what you're saying is that we take time. Whatever we're counseling and whatever we're guiding, we're taking time. And they're trying to show how they're taking time with their kids to give this instruction. It's not this little passive while they walk out the door, because it's just not going to do it. There's, like, a time that's required to take that.
It requires a relationship with your family. Like, this sounds like he's in relationship with his kids. They're not just, you know, part-time family. This sounds like, hey, I'm sharpening you like iron sharpens iron. You know, like, I'm sharpening you and helping you because I love you.
Yeah, yeah,
and, but there has to be a close relationship for the son to even listen to the father. So,
One thing, you know, I think it's obvious to everyone that one of the best teachings you can give to your kids is the father in action. Not what he always says, but that how does he treat his mother? How does he treat his wife? How does he treat people? How does he treat waiters and waitresses? How does he treat? You learn a lot. Sons see that, you know, how you treat your spouse.
How they love others.
Yes.
How a man loves his wife and loves his kids and loves others. I think that's a good point.
Yeah, and when Justin was dating Natalie, I mean, I had to get a tuna can opener and roll his tongue back up into his mouth because it was I'm sorry.
Well, and I think the other thing is also, you know, there's an element, especially I think in verse 5, of just almost like pleading.
Yes.
And that's what I hear. And I think part of that pleading is, just to translate it to the way we are with our children, is also being vulnerable and saying, you know what, I don't always get this right, or listen, I spoke to your dad disrespectfully. I've apologized to him, but I want you to know you saw that or witnessed that, and that was wrong. Do better than me. Like, it's also saying there's areas where I fall short, but I acknowledge those areas. I'm not going to gloss over them and pretend they're not there. I need you to pray for me. It's being vulnerable, too, and saying, you know, I'm in relationship with you. I'm here as your parent, but I'm also saying, like, I want you to do better than me. One of the things that, you know, going back to our conversations that we have at home, I tell them all the time, like, I'm not telling you this because it benefits me. I'm telling you this because it's selfless. I want you to have the best in life. And so, You know, I'm not just telling you this because it's entertaining to lecture you. Like, I don't want to lecture you. I'm saying,
I'm having fun.
I'm having fun. Sit down and let me have some fun. Like, I'm telling you this because
you will listen and clap when I'm done.
I want an ovation. No, I really, you know,
you
will really
ask for another speech.
We really do want them to be the best and have the best possible life. They're going to have their own trials and they're going to have their own things. You know, I always tell people, even under the best of circumstances, which we have, marriage is hard. Mm-hmm. You know, life is hard. The scriptures promise that we're going to go through tribulation. So why make it harder by choosing not to listen to the wisdom and instruction of those that love you? So.
You hear that, Nathan?
Yeah.
Good.
Well, and I think it actually started pleading at the end of verse 4 because he's asking for him to have kind of a receptive heart.
Mm.
Like, and then he told him what he wanted him to do. He wanted him to keep his commands and live, but he was asking for him to have like a heart of receptiveness.
Mm-hmm.
That's how I saw that.
Verse 6.
And then hold on to it. Yeah, so verse 6 through 9, who wants to read? Go ahead, Michelle.
Luke does.
Mom already read it.
Grandma does.
Do not forsake her, and she will preserve you. Love her, and she will keep you. Wisdom is a principal thing. Thereby get wisdom, and in all you're getting, get understanding. I exalt her, and she will promote you. She will bring you honor, and when you embrace her, she will place you on your head. She will place on your head an ornament of grace, a crown of glory, and she will deliver to you.
You know, this is probably to get wisdom, get understanding. Where do you get wisdom? You aren't going to get it on the play yard. You're not going to get it in a bar, necessarily. You're not going to get it in certain atmospheres that don't give wisdom. And getting wisdom is a search to go to those that know things, like Justin pointed out, business. Where do you get that information? Wisdom is to search it out and to apply yourself and to listen to people. And in the multitude of counsel, there's safety. And I think getting wisdom and understanding is also a search and a love for wisdom. Where do I get the best information if it's on marriage and family or if it's on children rearing? And I think that's a challenge because no one knows it all.
Y'all think when you see love her in verse 6,
to appreciate.
Mm-hmm. One thing is, until this time, kind of going through Proverbs, like, wisdom really does seem to have, like, this monetary value, but it's not money. It's not something you can exchange. Because so often, and we talked about this the other week, you know, it compares it to precious jewels, finding it, acquiring it. It's more profitable than silver. It's more precious than jewels. And here it talks about, you know, it's a garland of favor on your head. It's a crown of beauty. Like, it's compared to things of value. which, and then it talks about searching for it. Like, it's something, and so when it compares it to a woman, it's almost like, I don't know, it's just, I've never seen it that way, as being something that is just, it's something like tangible, like something of value. So, and then later on, you know, in Proverbs, when it talks about finding a wife and the value, I don't know, it's just wisdom, it's bigger than just a concept. It's not just knowledge. Like, it's something that is almost physical, like, that, you know, brings value.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking, too. That's, you took the words right out of my mouth. That's what I was thinking. Because we can gain wisdom and we'll have, like, the knowledge of it. But we are supposed to have, like, this is talking about our heart posture about it. We're supposed to value it and love it and honor it.
Mm-hmm. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. We love God. That is the foundation. And if you are anchored, you may go around like a balloon in the air, but if you're anchored in love and fear of the Lord, you have to trust that God will work with you as you press on to know Him.
The one thing that stood out to me was the Sheol Tzedek. My Bible says, she will set a garland of grace on your head and present you with a crown of splendor. And I know I've heard or read that before about the crown of grace, meaning gray hair, old age.
She'll turn your hair white.
Yeah. So gray hair as a badge of honor, dignity, and wisdom earned through a righteous life. It symbolizes that aging is a blessing rather than a disgrace, mm-hmm. and deserving of respect. But, you know, that's stood out. I have not heard that before.
I like that. That's a really good point.
Yeah, like, and I know it talks about gray hair being something, like, and I think David said something about it. Mm-hmm. I don't know, but he
went. My crown of wisdom.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. When I read 69, I was thinking you're rewarded for the hard things, and it triggered a memory of Kennedy in the moon speech, him saying that we choose to go to the moon this decade and do other things, not because they are easy, because they are hard.
Yeah.
And I don't know why that popped up, but you know, easy is, it reminds me of go on, get along, slothfulness, it'll mm-hmm. happen. You know, the hard stuff is making the conscious decision to pursue mm-hmm. something. You know, and you're rewarded for that.
Mm-hmm. Peer pressure is a very powerful influence, not only on our children, but on all of us. And, you know, and I think it's hard to go against peers at times, or the general consensus. Mm-hmm. But that is something that is structural, like people don't believe in God. You may be in a group of atheists, and they're propounding that. And there's a lot of pressure for that. So you really have to hold on to this wisdom that you get from the Lord. And like you said, Ryan, we're going to do not because it's easy, it's because it's hard. And I think anything in life is that we pursue, it's times it's going to be very difficult. Starting a company, starting a business, doing these things, going to law school or medical school, or it's a challenge.
Are we ready to move to 10 through 13, or does anyone have anything else?
So verse 6, you said, like, what does that mean?
Oh.
It goes back to chapter 2 and, like, the qualities of wisdom.
Mm-hmm.
Chapter 2, I'll just read it like the verse I'm talking about. For wisdom will enter your heart, knowledge will be pleasant to your soul, and discretion will protect you, and understanding will guard you. And it's personifying wisdom in chapter 4 as a woman, because a discreet wife mm-hmm. is a way that she can protect her husband.
I think she asked about love. Right.
What I do?
She was asking specifically about the word love in 6.
Well, that was the part that stood out, but if that's
love for him, she'll watch over you. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's building off of chapter 2, mm-hmm. a lot of it is. Mm-hmm. The qualities of wisdom, and now... Anyway, sorry.
We're building the value mm-hmm. as we're going along.
But Luke would be happy to read next whenever you're ready.
Luke, you want to read 10 through 13?
Loud and proud, my boy.
Listen, my son, accept what I say, and the years of your life will be many. I instruct you in the way of wisdom and lead you along straight paths. When you walk, your steps will not be hampered. When you run, you will not stumble. Hold on to instruction, do not let it go. Guard it well, for it is your life.
So in verse 10, when it says, accept what I say, and the years of your life will be like many. You know, me and mom said, I do what we say, we'll kill you. That's why. So far, you've been obedient. That's why you're still here. Good job.
Nothing. My goodness. Thoughts?
Kill you. Do you guys threaten your kids with death ever?
Huh?
Don't answer that.
No, actually,
we're both like, what?
I actually don't, but yesterday I was having a conversation with Elijah, wherever he is. Where is he? Anyways, I was telling him about like things that I had done that almost ended very badly. Laundry list of them, but one of them was he ever heard something I was listening to, and it was talking about child trafficking. And I was like, he popped in. He's like, you know, it's not just the little kids. Like, it's kids my age too. I was like, yeah, you're right. And I told him the time that I was probably actually 16. I was working in a store, and this dude was lingering. Like, you could tell, like, something went right. I got the hibby-jibbies, and I moved to a different part of the store where I was working, and I didn't leave the store that night until I had somebody else, more people walking out. Like, the dude had creep written all over him, and I was just telling him, like, that happens, and what he was saying is absolutely right. But that's just, like, one of the many examples of, like, yeah, I should probably be dead now, or not here, or this, I did this.
See, that's a different reason than things like why I should be dead. Like, yes, you almost got kidnapped, but me, like, I did stupid crap.
I did stupid crap too. He's told us yeah. We both almost got kidnapped. Did you know that? We both almost got kidnapped as kids. Somebody was walking out the Walmart with me and the buggy. They were running out the door with the buggy. My dad got them.
Yeah,
me in the buggy.
Somebody nabbed Sawyer one time.
They were trying to nab me.
Brought him back and was like, "My bad."
I guess where I was really going to that is like we have had conversations over the years like that. Is like I'm not just wasting my breath here. I'm telling you
right.
because I have experienced this. This could have ended really bad, mm-hmm. and it didn't. And that's why I'm here, and I can tell you this. Mm-hmm. Trust me.
Yeah, and laugh when I'm done talking.
I have shot a hole in my house.
All I know is.
True story.
True story.
Luke was in the group.
Thoughts?
I shot a gun off in the house one time when you were baby.
Okay.
And I was the property manager.
That neighbor's dead now. Different reason.
Different reason.
Focus.
Aaron, help us. What are your thoughts?
I approve of not shooting your gun in your house.
That is smart.
I take a firm stance on that one, unless you really have to.
I'm being attentive to your words.
Those four rules are there for a reason.
The listen, my son, accept my words. Again, that whole leading thing comes across to me. Again, it's... This is not selfishly motivated. Mm-hmm. I'm teaching you the way because I want your steps not to be hindered. I want you to have a long life. I want you, you know, it's You know how when you're trying to like convince somebody of something, you will literally explain it in every possible way you can think to explain it to try and convince them. And I feel like that's kind of the way he comes across.
Is that what you do?
He calls it beating a dead horse, but I call it really selling it. And I think that we try to, you know, that's the way Solomon comes across in this. It's like, listen, kid.
You can explain it any way you want. I still don't understand.
But then you see the light bulb. Like, after the 50th time, I finally say, oh, that's what you mean. And then it makes it all worth it. So I feel like even with the children, it's like, sometimes.
A lot of people conflate punishment with discipline. You notice he says, "Here, my son, your father's discipline." Mm-hmm. He's not talking about spanking or switching or timeout or whatever. He's talking about discipline. And if we focus on strictly punishing the kid and say, "Don't do that," and don't actually discipline them and train them up, that kid's only going to know what not to do when you're around. It doesn't mean that they're going to know why they shouldn't do that thing. And I knew a lot of kids that were spanked or switched and all of that growing up. And then as soon as they got out of their parents' house, they went crazy because they had no discipline. They were not trained on why they didn't do those things. They just knew that they were told not to do those things. And those two things are not the same. At some point, this person has to be a grown-up. And if we don't teach them, they will have to learn it from the world, like Justin said.
Aaron? Last week we were talking about that. That is so on point, because we were talking about discipline and that there's different forms of discipline, the instruction and doing it in gentleness, but then there's also the need for chastisement. Discipline is not just, it's not, you know, because of what you just described. That's really interesting.
There's a reason why when kids get to be teenagers or in college, they shut down the communication with the parents. Or they show the side that they want their parents to see, and they're not honest. There's a lot of kids that would not call their parents because they're too drunk to drive. They would just go with a friend and hope that friend is safe. Or get a cab or an Uber or whatever. Or drive drunk, which is what I did. There's a good reason they don't do that. We have to keep in mind that as the kids get older, that they are going to make mistakes, but we want to keep that avenue of communication open.
I mean, just in environments like this, when we're coming to church, we're getting discipline.
Yes.
But we're not getting chastised, but we're getting discipline. That doesn't mean that there isn't discipline that does have included chastisement. I'm just saying that it's more well-rounded than that. So I agree with you.
I would just add to you that, you know, part of that is that vulnerable aspect. Like, I've made bad choices. These are the, you know, I mean, with discretion, obviously, and keeping in mind, you know, age and all of that. But, you know, I made this bad choice. I don't want to see you walk through the consequences that I walk through. Let me walk with you through this difficult situation, because, you know, if you'll submit and trust me, you know, I can help you navigate it better. And it's just, again, relationship, having those hard talks, those are all parts of discipline. It's not just, you know, waiting for them to fall so you can whack them. It's I'm gonna navigate this with you because I'm a better guide, and, you know, if you'll accept it, I can help you.
In verse 13, I was looking at that one, as far as like wisdom can like guard your heart, but it can also guard you against, if you're guarding your wisdom and you're guarding your heart, because it's about to start getting a lot more into the heart, then you're guarding also against the evil things. So you're guarding on both ways. Like, it's a two-way guard.
Mm-hmm.
How do y'all see that?
I don't think I understand what you're saying. Explain it again.
Like, it's going to guard your life, it's going to protect you, but then it's, maybe I'm getting ahead of myself for 14 and stuff, but it's, I see it also as like guarding you against going down the road of wickedness, because it's going to be mm-hmm. more difficult.
Mm-hmm. So preventative and, well, I think that's what you're saying.
Well, it's easy to, let that stuff go. And like, once you let that discipline go, you have to court it back and bring it back.
That's harder.
Yeah.
I think I jumped ahead and started talking about things in 14:15.
You're doing fine.
Do we want to read 14:15? Are we ready for that?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
You want me to?
Yeah. Thanks. Thank you.
Keep off the path of the wicked. Don't proceed on the way of evil ones. Avoid it. Don't travel on it. Turn away from it and pass it by. That's pretty clear.
Mm-hmm.
At least my version is.
Or get the consequence. The natural consequence.
Yeah.
As you try to rein it all back in over time. Any other thoughts?
Oh. Maybe I was reading a different version the last time I went through this. How does that cross with dealing with, I guess if we're correcting a brother, that's one thing, versus just a random person that you know is doing something they shouldn't be doing? You know what I mean? Like, I don't know, this works against my my nature, because if I see somebody doing something they shouldn't be doing, even if I don't know them and it's not safe, I'm probably going to say something.
Well, it says keep hold of instruction in 13.
Well, it says, but it says not to step in their way.
Yeah.
Avoid it and do not pass by it. Now, maybe he's talking about getting out of the way of not joining in with the wickedness.
That's kind of
what he's talking about is, you know, there's the path of the wicked. Like, don't toy with it. Don't step on the path. Don't think, I'm just going to take a few steps on it. I'm going to see what's here a little bit, dip my toe in it. You think, no, just... go around it. Don't even
okay.
go there.
Yeah, I read it. I see it.
If you read 13 or 14 and 15 together, that's really.
Yeah.
He's just saying, just don't even go there. Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, because like he's saying, do not enter the path and do not step into the way of the wicked. So
yeah.
he's
mm-hmm.
he, that way isn't saying.
That way is the
to inhibit them.
Them.
It's saying don't
them.
Follow
them
their
them
path.
Yeah.
Don't even allow yourself to be tempted.
Yeah.
Just don't dip your toe in those waters. Just avoid it.
Mm-hmm. Got it.
Mark sent me something yesterday, Lot's wife, about being tempted. She turned around and looked into what she was missing, what she was giving up. I mean, there was a whole video on it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I thought of when I thought of this. Don't tempt yourself. Just don't put yourself in a position where you have to make that decision, make that conscious decision, just walk away.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Aaron, too, I was thinking about this again. I think you're right in your thinking with the, you know, like you wouldn't be able to be there and see someone doing something and not give them some sort of instruction, whether they receive it or not, it's one thing or another. But in Proverbs 1, it talks about that, how wisdom's all around us and it's calling out to us. And it's really that person's duty, whether they choose to receive it. It's all around us. Just a lot of times we're just choosing not to receive it, but I do think it's our duty to say something.
Mm-hmm.
Especially if it's life or death.
Right.
And, you know.
Yeah. Sure.
My dad told me a story, and I'll be real quick. But he was in the Navy on a ship. They were eating in the mess hall, and all the sailors were around, and he said that he needed salt. And so he was going to reach across the table, and this one person he never knew says, "I wouldn't do that if I was you." He says, "Don't reach across another man's table, or you'll Sharon corrected me on this the other day, or you're going to get a fork in your hand. Is that true?
Yeah, well, this would be Justin the whole
maybe
time.
Maybe not literally, but yeah.
Bring it there.
The whole time.
Yeah, too slick.
I guess the point is that sometimes it pays to have people like Aaron that are willing to pipe up. I wouldn't do that if I was you.
Yeah.
You know.
That's, I agree.
That guy needs to be high-fived in the forehead.
All right, who wants to read verse 16 through 19?
Ooh, pick me.
Go, Justin.
For they cannot rest, meaning the bad people, the evil ones, until they do evil. They are robbed of sleep till they make someone stumble. Mm-hmm. They eat the bread of wickedness and drink the wine of violence, meaning they find their sustenance on doing wrong. Well, there's not really like a wine of violence out there. I don't know. I'm just teaching you. The path of the righteous is like the morning sun. Now I can look at you, oh, Mr. Righteous Man. Shining ever brighter till the full light of day. But the way of the wicked is like deep darkness. They do not know what makes them stumble. That's why Caleb is the way he is. Just gotta love him. He doesn't know what makes him stumble.
You know, it's funny. You know, wickedness, when it's operating and it wants to get its hooks in you, it really is relentless. And you can feel when it's pursuing you. And you know it's not necessarily a person, but it's a force that, you know, will make something easy. Like, it seems like it's drawing you in. Like, you know, I don't know. I think of, like, somebody who doesn't want to do drugs. Somehow someone who doesn't want to do drugs, the drugs are right there. But when you want the drugs, you can't get them, you know?
Yeah.
It's just...
It presents itself.
Yeah, it's like, you know, clawing at you to try and pull you in and seems so appealing. I mean, Satan is... He's in hot pursuit. And until he gets you... And then, you know, obviously that's when the misery comes. And, you know, and the other thing is like we were talking earlier today about the ripple effect, you know. It's wickedness, evil will pursue the person that it can overtake, but the ultimate goal isn't just conquering one person or bringing one person down, it's bringing around the circle. It's all the people that love you. It's all the people that are counting on you or depending on you, or it's all the other things that it affects around you. Like, mm-hmm. It is a massive chessboard, mm-hmm. And the only way to take yourself out of play is to keep off the path of the wicked and don't proceed on the ways of the evil one. And you know, we can't do that alone. We need one another. We need instruction. We need all the teachings. We need a pursuit and, you know, an ornament and a jewel and value it.
Y'all realize how deep their meaning is in verse 17?
They eat the bread of wickedness and drink the wine of violence. Mm.
That's a Passover reference.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Committed to
something. We could go pretty deep on that.
Could you expound on that, Justin?
Yeah, for Justin.
I mean, after Josh taught us all about the Seder and the significance of the Passover to the Jews, right? Well, mm-hmm. These people were Hebrews. The Passover was the time that they celebrated their freedom from Egypt and that their lives were spared, that they were guarded. And he's using that just to try and explain the gravity of what not clinging to wisdom and falling in with the wrong crowd is like to whoever he's talking to here, his children, his sons. This chapter opens up with sons instead of just son. So I think there was a deep significance to that sentence about they eat the bread of wickedness and drink the wine of violence, because prior to him saying this, the references to Passover in the Bible have been celebratory and gratefulness and safety and just God's provision. And this is, I think in Solomon's words, this is the ultimate way to personify what the opposite of that is.
It's a counterfeit.
Yeah. Making a covenant with evil. Mm-hmm.
It's like, you know, when you hear somebody like say JC in a way that's derogatory, like that affects you. But then when you see like in a movie, like clergy being portrayed as like evil people or whatever, and then like them, I can't think of a movie where Jesus has been personified and like totally turned into a bad guy or whatever, but there's different levels of like shock, and this is like an ultimate statement to induce like,
And it's re-emphasized in 18 and 19, just straight out dark.
Eating from the table of demons, the demonic instead of God's table, like.
Well, they're having communion, that unity.
Because he says you can't eat from the table of the demons, like, or they say that, but they say it.
When you put it in context with Solomon, it's interesting because in, I think it's 1 Kings 3 is where he asked for wisdom. And it's like verse 9, I think, but a couple verses before that it talks about he followed in all the ways of David except that he offered sacrifices on the high places and the high altars, which is basically, I wonder if he learned from that. We don't do that. That the sacrifices for God. It's
you did that later on in his life with all of you did it later on when he was older.
Yeah, First Corinthians.
There's no fool like an old fool.
I remember reading that in First Kings.
And they say, for they eat the bread of wickedness, those are people that live by corruption, or they live on the proceeds of doing badly, or companies that do badly, they know it. And it will always be violent. There will always be violence, not physical violence, but it'll do violence to your soul. And there's people that are, you know, look at how many scam, I don't know how many spam calls you get or scam calls you get. But I mean, it's incredible. I want you to know that somebody told me I won $328 million. He called me from Africa. And I said, oh, really? That's good news. How do I get it? He says, well, you sent me a check for da-da-da-da. I says, you know what? I feel generous today. I'm going to give it to you. Click, But.
So you lied?
Huh?
So you lied?
You think?
Well, not really. If it really was the money, he was giving it away.
Well, tell him to give it to God. Preach the gospel.
16 through 19 is pretty scary. Are y'all ready for 20?
Yeah.
For 27? Oh, sorry, go ahead, Justin.
We can overthink it, but really he's just trying to create the point that, like, evil can't be satiated. It doesn't ever have enough. Like, it's a lust, right? Mm-hmm. Lust of the flesh, lust of the eyes, the pride of life. Nothing can satisfy outside of God and God's love, at least long term.
It's interesting. I like to listen to some true crime stuff. And one of the ones that I've been listening to are former, like, drug runners and that kind of stuff. And it's always the same thing. It starts off with a little bit. They get a ton of money. And then at a certain point, they just can't let it go. It has nothing to do with trying to get more money, because they already have more money than they could ever spend. But they just have to keep doing it because they like it. They like the power, they like the ability, all of that kind of stuff. And then
getting away with it.
Then they get caught and they lose everything. And they always say the same thing. Yeah, it was fun, but no, you shouldn't do it.
Yeah.
It was really horrible at the end of the day.
Ready. Sorry, Beth.
No, don't apologize. That's fine. Who wants to read next? Kelly, you want to go?
Where are we at? 19?
20 through 27.
20 through 27. My son, attend to my words, incline thine ear unto my sayings. Let them not depart from thine eyes, keep them in the midst of thine heart. For they are life unto those that find them, and health in all their flesh. Keep thy heart with all diligence, for out of it are the issues of life. Put away from thee a froward mouth, and preserve lips, perverse lips, put far from thee. Let them eyes look right on, and let thine eyelids look straight before thee. Ponder the path of thy feet, and let all thy ways be established. Turn not to the right hand nor to the left. Remove thy foot from evil.
Wise advice.
I think the guard your heart above all else, for it's the source of life. That's like a poignant part. A lot of it is warning, but then he gives like specific guards, you know, watch for your heart. Don't let your mouth speak dishonestly. Watch the way you speak. Keep your eyes fixed, you know, keep those guards over your eyes. I feel like there's very specific instruction for how you can keep the sayings, you know, keep his sayings.
And this is our walk with God, to pay attention. Don't turn our ears away from his words. Don't let them out of our sight. Don't let his words out of our sight. Keep his words within our heart. Because his words are life to those that can find them. They're health to your body. And above all else, like, guard your heart, for everything you do is going to flow from it. Keep your mouth free of perversity. Keep corrupt talk from your lips. I mean, that's our daily struggle with our walk with God, is that discipline of not compromising. Because it's really easy to get comfortable and to relax. And when you get comfortable and relaxed, then you start slipping. And then you're comfortable slipping because you've been comfortable and relaxed.
Mm-hmm. Seems to me it's starting to like focus on gates, like your ear gates, your eye gates.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like, it's
guarding those areas.
Mm-hmm. You know, the thing that I've seen a couple of them, and I really don't care for them. It's practical jokes people play. They call it punking or something of that nature. I've become attuned to that, and I think that's an evil thing to prank people, make them, you know. That's the way I see it.
Justin and I bonded. He bonded a little more often than I bonded.
That is something that we have struggled with.
I don't struggle with it. You do.
But that's the problem. He does it for his entertainment.
We're not taking it.
And I don't. I'm not good with sarcasm. I don't like, you know, jokes. I think that we need to be.
She walks up the stairs before me, and I'm just like.
That's
pinch.
No,
she's
it's the.
I'm laughing at Natalie's response. I'm sorry.
He'll run ahead of me and turn off all the lights and hide in the corner.
It's been a long time since I've done that.
Because he wants to scare me, and he loves it, and it upsets me. And the more upset I get, the more he enjoys
it.
Anyway, that's. We need counseling.
Some of that's the marriage adjustment stuff. Because, like, I have lots of siblings, and the way that all of my siblings communicate are all exactly the same. Whereas Alyssa's an only child. And so there's some stuff that she just processes it differently because she didn't grow up with siblings.
Mm-hmm.
And so me trying to learn to adapt to her trying to learn to adapt to me, I'm just like, you always wanted siblings, so you get the experience too.
You came back. Came back.
Well, I think the other thing that we need, you know, when we talk, I think that this is deeper too. When we're talking about our mouth speaking dishonestly, I do think that we need to be careful not to let corrupt communication come out of our mouth. But one thing that, and I'm actually working on a teaching right now. It's also, speaking dishonestly is also about, you know, not trusting God. When we say, you know, something terrible is going to happen, or, you know, or I'm going to go broke, or I can't pay my bills, or these, and I'm not saying that, you know, there are times where we have difficult encounters, but speaking perverse things is also
a negative.
It's, well, it's choosing not to trust God in our circumstance, and so speaking those things is confirming.
Didn't Beth recently preach?
Yeah, to our spirit, like, oh, this is, there's doubt in here, and there's hopelessness, and there's, you know, fear, and there's all of these things where what we should be speaking is God's bigger than my situation. God can walk with me through this. God's grace is sufficient for me. You know, those are, so I think that it is about, you know, obviously you don't want to, like I tell my kids, can't cuss, no corrupt communication out of your mouth. But I think it's bigger than that. It's also saying God is bigger than my circumstances and I can trust him.
It's also the online gabbing and gossiping and stuff and the obsessive need that some people have to comment on every single thing when sometimes it's just not worth commenting. Or if somebody has a tragedy that happens and they feel the need to go on and comment on the person's Facebook page or whatever, because every word that they have to say is one that everybody else needs to hear. That kind of stuff trashes your spirit, and it brings judgment on yourself. And we, even though it's the internet, and we feel like we're not held accountable the same way we are in real life, we are. As Christians, we should know better than that. Yeah, corrupt. So my point with that, when you say, well, how's that corrupt? A big part of the corruption there is you aren't listening to that person. You aren't sitting down and finding out about the circumstance or learning everything. You find out a little bit about something, and then you feel the need to immediately go out and make a comment or attack somebody. I'm not saying anybody here necessarily is doing that, but I'm saying that general attitude is one that we have to guard against. It's dangerous, and it's wrong.
Evangeline can elaborate on this if she wants, but she's been bringing up, like, you know, when you're around a lot of people her age, like, idle words, a lot of idle words. She's been super attuned to it, kind of like you're attuned to, like, the joking thing. She's been super attuned to that. I don't know what got her attuned to it, but
what are idle she's been words? Like, what would be an example?
Elaborate, please.
Yeah.
Spilling the tea.
You know, cussing, just unnecessary words, not like for something. Just
I can't stand You might as well cuss. Never say I can't.
Please stop.
There's somebody in my office who's constantly nominated to speak publicly, and I just count the ums.
Well, she said not, she's not including
I know.
Not words like that, just unnecessary words, F word, B word, just
trying to be cool, or
like that, or just words that mean other words.
Seasoning.
Or
gosh,
crap.
Yeah.
You said, you did it first.
I just pointed to myself.
Well, you know, I was. That's a weakness I think of a lot of people too, and I've felt that sometimes you feel like you have to fill the gaps. You know, in conversation with people, it's it can feel like a compulsion. I know I've suffered with that too. It's like, oh, I'm supposed to say something. But sometimes we're not supposed to say something. You're right. Sometimes you're just supposed to be.
Yeah.
And that's something you have to get comfortable
She's
with.
She's really good at that.
Yeah.
And I think that's what makes her attuned to things like that.
Well,
so
that's an interesting observation.
Just remember the words. If you're feeling mad and you want a roar, then keep that, then count the four.
That's the only one I actually
Me and Ryan were singing that to all the kids at Ryan, at Elijah's.
Where do I know
that from?
It's Daniel Tiger.
Tiger. We
were singing
that.
It came up the other day, and I couldn't remember the words. It's like, if you're feeling mad and you want to...
Out of all of the episodes, that's the only one I remember.
We were sitting at Elijah's band concert the other night, and all the kids are like,
they
did not want to be there. So Ryan's like, if you're feeling... And we were on the front row. They just...
The bars are all going...
And the kids are like...
There was one time when Aaron and I were having an argument some number of years ago back when we were dating.
I don't remember us ever arguing.
And I was mad, and he was like, if you're feeling mad. I couldn't say mad.
I never heard of that, but I might use it.
What was
Tim
that?
Tim might need to use that.
Daniel Tiger took over for Mr. Rogers.
That was risky.
I
thought
that
was risky.
It could have backfired. He had a 50-50 shot on that.
All right, take it over, good ones.
I was going to say real quick, I think that message actually is really timely, especially that last part with Daniel Tiger, because something came through my email, and it was one of those, oh, Lord Jesus, help me.
Roar.
And I just there's so much that I want to say, but I'm gonna let it be. I'm going on vacation starting tomorrow, so it'll be there when I get back Monday.
When I was doing grants, there was much more political, especially dealing with professors who were all prima donnas. And so there's probably a feature now, but there was no feature. I actually found a plugin and set it up on my Outlook so that there was a 5-minute delay between when it hit send and it actually went out. Because there was more than once where I sent it, I said, no, I'm going to try that again.
You can do that with Gmail, because you can set a delay between when it sends and it actually goes, so you can recall the message.
This was 15 years ago now. Thank God I've been rescued from that pit of hell. But that was a good learning experience, though. I adhered to discipline.
I wish there was something like that in life, because sometimes I see things, I'm like, oh, can I see that?
Yeah, trying to find that delay button on your mouth can be very challenging.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Good message. Thank you. I like talking.